I'm Edward Crespin. I'm going to be being the narrator for this committee, and I'm the committee chairperson. And today we have Robert Schulenberger. Christy Crespin, and Nellie Emerson, and I'll give some description to their background a little bit. But I wanted to talk about the topic. And when we talk about soft skills, a lot of times people are thinking, well, okay, it's the way I dress, the way I look, brushing my teeth, combing my hair. But it's beyond that. The soft skills that a lot of companies are looking for are more involved than that. They're looking for things like communication skills. They're looking at listening skills. They're looking at teleworking skills. They're looking at leadership skills. They're looking at interaction skills with other people. They're looking at flexibility. They're looking at creativity. They're looking at being neighborly to somebody else. They're looking at your presentation. They're looking at your ability to travel. Other skills that they look at are active listener, effective communicator, a problem solver, accepting feedback, accepting negative feedback, looking at conflict resolution. And while these folks are talking about this topic, I'd like you to think about these words as we are going through this process. I'm flipping my pages around. And these are the words for soft skills. There's quite a few of them. Accountability, accuracy, adaptability, adept, alertness, ambition, analytical, assertiveness, business skill, capable, correspondence, conflict, consciousness, cooperation, detailed orientation, and I'm just reading a few of the things. Influence, innovation, inspiration, organization, positiveness, being able to be teachable or teach other people, teamwork. Those are some of the other skills that we're looking at, soft skills. And these all can be located at the website. It's jobs, let's see, it's jobs, job, let's see, jobsearch.about.com. And you could look at that. And, you know, the internet really does offer a lot of stuff. If you just put down job skills, you can come up with a lot of lists that are there talking about that. And if you're looking for employment, that is what you want to do, is find out more about yourself. What can you do to improve yourself? And one more comment I want to make before we start with the panel is that each job that you're looking at has their own set of job skills. If you want to go into teaching, they have soft job skills for that. If you go into accounting, they have soft job skills with that. And a lot of people don't understand that. It's not just interacting with people; it's knowing your skills. If the requirement is to type, know what your typing skills are like. That's a soft job skill. If you're required to read Braille, know what your Braille skill is. Don't fake it. So they're going to be talking about this stuff. So let me first introduce Robert Schulenberg. He's a program manager, transition and rehabilitation program, Junior Blind of America North. And Robert works with youth in transition in the areas of job skills, acquisition, and employment. He will discuss the importance of utilizing soft skills in becoming and remaining employed, staying successfully employed, and maintaining professionalism. And that's one thing that's really important, that just because you got the job, It doesn't mean that you should not continue working on your soft job skills. It's a continuous process to have that need to keep improving yourself. The other panelist is going to be Christy Crespin. She's a vocational service for the Department of State Hospitals at Patton. She has worked as a vocational rehabilitation counselor in the Department of Vocational Rehabilitation and now currently is working with the state hospitals as a counselor, vocational counselor as well. She also performs other duties in the social work field, and she works with forensic patients. She'll address reasons employees are not hiring people and not able to remain employed is one of the big topics we have. The next presenter is Nellie Emerson. She's a rehabilitation staff manager for the Department of Vocational Rehabilitation in the Inland Empire Blind Field Services. And she will be talking about the obstacles that get in the way of prospective employees and their abilities to be hired and remain employed. So first of all is Robert.
Very good. And please, everyone, feel free when we get to questions. Call me Rob. I'm normally not this formal. I'm hardly ever wearing long sleeves. So, you know, this is a banner day for all of you folks who don't get to look at my elbows. Can you hear me now? Better? All right. This is very strange. Yeah, I'm not used to not having to use my teacher voice. So, so my name is Rob Schulenberg, and I work with Junior Blind of America in our Northern California field office in Sacramento. And I'm pleased to be on this panel here today. How much time do I have?
We have about an hour, so we have plenty of time.
Okay. You think so.
Yeah.
All right. I'm pleased to be here today to speak on this topic because it's something that I've been working in collaboration with Lions Center for the Blind and other colleagues around the state to address this issue of not just how do we address the skills that our students need for transition, but specifically when soft skills are identified as those things that lawyers need the employers need the most, how come no one can define it? You go to 10 different websites, you get 10 different answers. I know this because I actually did a non-academic, what I think of as a non-academic meta-analysis. That's a fancy word for saying I went to Google and I typed in, what are soft skills? And at 10, I started seeing similar answers, but they were always different answers. Maybe I would get a quick snapshot of three things. These are job skills, or these are soft skills. Or five things. These are soft skills. These are the 10 soft skills you need. But by the time I got to 25 websites, they started repeating each other, and by the time I got to 30, they were quoting each other. And yet, no one was able to define them. No one was able to cluster them. I had 65 data points that I had to code and cluster, and even then, I was throwing out nearly a third of my data because they were not soft skills. They were actually, I would argue, hard skills. Still?
Yeah.
Better?
Yeah.
All right.
As it's been recorded.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Chris, you made me laugh. These were not hard skills. These are not soft skills. They were actually hard skills, technical skills, skills that are not just very objective, but they're also specific to task delivery. I would argue that soft skills can be measured, and I'll explain this in a minute. Soft skills aren't as soft and fuzzy and ambiguous and amorphous and fog-like as we might think that the name implies. They can be learned. They can be measured. They, in most cases, can be observed. And I'll explain why it's only in most cases. But hard skills, literacy, anything to do with literacy, I would argue is a hard skill. That is something that can be applied to any job, and it's specific to a task context. So I started clustering them. I found four major domains. I have wonderful diagrams I could show you if anyone was ever interested. But we doodled up a diagram. We said there's a relationship between those four domains. And I know you're all thinking, what are those domains? I'm going to tell you what those domains are. If there's four things you're going to take away from this, from my presentation here, you know, take everything you want away from everyone else's. And remember, only four things from me. These four things. They are critical thinking, collaboration, work ethic, and social rapport. Those are the four domains that we identified, Caleb Vanden Klein at Lions Center for the Blind and myself identified as the major domains in which all soft skills fall under. And they, I will repeat it because it bears repeating. Critical thinking, think of that at the apex of the diamond. And then off to the left and right, you've got social rapport and work ethic. Those are two different domains. Social rapport, it's a word I had to make up because nothing described it. It's the ability to get people to like and trust you. But I'm sure we've all met people that we like that we wouldn't want to work with. And likewise, we have people that we work well with but maybe we don't really like so much. Totally different skill set, its own domain. This is where this eye contact, this is where this ability to, your emotional projection, your physical projection, how you present yourself, your ability to respond to people in social context, that's all under that social rapport. Work ethic likely demonstrates, these are skills that demonstrate how work is valued, your dependability, your punctuality, your reliability, delivering what you say you're going to deliver, not just showing up to work, but showing up on time and showing up every day. Three different skills, all under work ethic. And then you take your social rapport and you take your work ethic. Those are both required skill sets that contribute to your success in the domain of collaboration. Teamwork, negotiation, accepting criticism from others, learning from it, leadership skills, those all fall, and you had a great list. They all fall under these domains. So in that collaborative domain, you get your leadership skills. That's your ability to work with others to deliver a task. Going back to critical thinking, we can think, critical thinking, what is that? Hey, basically three things: time management, problem solving, common sense, and then anything that falls under those three categories we can think about. Now, I don't want to take up everyone's time, and I want to save room for question and answer, but remember those four domains. Critical thinking, social rapport, work ethic, and collaboration. When I said earlier that in the most part these can be observed, that is true. However, you cannot observe a critical thinking process. This is all internal. Problem-solving skills, you can't observe that thought process. You can observe the delivery of it as it manifests in work ethic or collaboration or social settings. Common sense, those skills that we acquire that handle most situations, that knowledge and aptitudes that allow us to respond to most situations that come from experience, that common sense. Similarly, that is fed to us from social rapport, fed to us from collaboration, fed to us from work ethic, but we don't observe common sense. We observe, typically, it's lack of appearance in people, but specifically and more seriously, we observe when it is applied. We observe people making the right choices. We observe them making a change in behavior from something less efficient to something that's very efficient. And time management, this is the best example. This one might be the best way to wrap your head around it. You can teach time management. You observe punctuality, which is under work ethic. Think of it that way. You can teach punctuality, and I'll bet you that you start to affect time management. You can teach time management. You won't observe it until you see people being punctual. Does this all make sense? I'm hearing nods and yeses. That's awesome. Okay. I'm going to leave it at that, and we can come back to this later, but I want to thank the panel again for inviting me to be part of this, because I think this is substantial. When looking at the Contra Costa County did a survey of employers, what is it that you want to see in your employees? And within the top seven, they mentioned those four domains by name, with technical skills coming in at number two, social skills being at the top of the pack. And then when they saw, when they said, what skill gaps are you seeing in your current employees? Three of the top five were these soft skills domains. And again, the actual ability to do the job was like number three. So this is just one survey from one county, but it emphasizes the fact that if we can teach students with disabilities, who we know can be competitive on the technical side of things, to acquire these skill gaps, to overcome the skill gaps that seem to be present across society, regardless of disability, then our clients have the edge. Thank you very much. I'm going to pass the mic.
So as a part of the skill gaps, one of the things that I really work on with the folks that I deal with that aren't necessarily blind, although I do have some that are, the things that we talk about are, as Ed and Rob said, the soft skills. You can have good technical skills and technically be able to know how to get something done. For instance, a lot of you are computer whizzes. I just heard an iPhone, so I know, you know, good smartphone users, right? And we love our technology and our gadgetry, but when do you use it? Do you use it any old time you want? Do you not pay attention and do your own thing? I know some people that don't have disabilities, and what I know that they do is that they're constantly on their phones texting or emailing or doing something. I hear it all the time. I hear the bubbles, and it annoys me, but they do it. And don't they think that people can see that they're doing that in the meetings? I mean, it astounds me when I hear that going on. So I think, oh, they don't have a disability, but maybe they do, because isn't that a soft skill, listening? Isn't that a part of communication? Communication is one of the most important things that we do or don't do well. So what gets in the way of interviewees who are doing the job search, whether it's paid or volunteer work experience? What do you guys think are some things that would stand out that need to happen? Do we have another mic? No? Just shout it out and I'll repeat it. Come on, you guys, wake up. Uh-huh. Hi, Donna. Yes, what would the employer be looking for in a potential employee? In regards to no, soft skills. Okay. Soft skills, as I don't know if you walked in late, Donna, but Rob mentioned. Okay, so the skills, technical skills are things that you can learn. Soft skills are things that you have inside of you, or you learn by practicing, wouldn't you say? Yeah. That you would learn by practicing? Yes. Okay, so hang on. So Donna said one of the things that we do who don't see nonverbals, and I know because I have to be very careful with this, is that we interrupt.
And we don't listen.
We don't listen, and we don't ask. That's what we don't do. Okay? Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah. I finally got wireless enough to pull up my notes. And I would offer here, for the sake of common language during this presentation, if we think of hard skills as a skill used to perform a specific or singular task, soft skills are themselves an interrelated set of learnable skills that allow people to work together effectively. And that is why we rely on social, which tend to be nonverbal visual cues. That is why we tend to think about coincidental actions, such as showing up in order to do the work. That is why we think of the ability to work together, because it involves such an amount of social component and general knowledge, which a person with limited visual learning channels is going to miss out on, because so much of what's happening in the environment is not accessible to the person with diminished sight. Thank you.
Can you stand up and state your name, please?
Sure, my name is
Wayne.
Wayne?
Wayne. Okay, hi. Okay. Wayne Dick. Going to an interview to know and knowing which social skills to emphasize. Go ahead. Okay, so he's saying in his engineering college, the emphasis wouldn't so much be on social skills, although they would help, but he'd better be punctual, better be on time. So there are things that, and you know, this isn't just for people with visual impairments. This is for other people who may have the negative symptoms of schizophrenia, who may have some other kind of mental condition that causes some kind of behavioral disconnect or deficits or differences. And we all have them. We're all human. And nobody has the corner on soft skills. But the more that we can show those soft skills, the more that we can show that we're a team player, show that things are intrinsic within us. For instance, in one of the questions that we ask in, we have at Patton State Hospital, a program where patients get to interview after taking our 12-week job preparation course. We have an interview, and one of the questions that we ask are, is how will you know that you are successful in your job? What do you think of the difference between these two answers? Number one answer is, well, my boss will tell me that I'm doing a good job. I won't get in trouble, and they'll be happy with me because I'm doing good. I'm doing well. And here's the second answer. I will know that I am doing my very best. And by doing my very best and communicating with my boss, I will know that I'm successful on the job. Which would you rather hear as an interviewer? Number two. Okay. Another case in point. How many people go to an interview and at the end of the interview they ask you, do you have any questions for me? Do you have any questions for us? First answer is, oh no, I'm okay. No. Or, oh yeah, I have a question. How much am I going to make? How much are you going to pay me? And what perks do I get? Okay? Interviewer wouldn't be very happy with that one, right? Okay, but the second question, okay, second answer or second scenario, do you have any questions for us? Yes. I would like to know when I might be hearing from you and what type of hours that you might have me work. I would like to know a little bit about the team that I would be working with. Or even putting a question back on the interviewer. I've given you my ideas. Could you please tell me a little bit about what you think about XYZ, whatever the interview is? Which one would you rather hear as an interviewer? Number two. Another situation. You're finished with the interview. You're done, right? No. What happened to the thank you for allowing me to interview letter that goes over thanking the person for the interview and telling a little bit more about yourself? Maybe something that you didn't get to say in the interview that you thought about would be helpful. Maybe they already made up their minds, but maybe they didn't. And so I believe that is a soft skill in terms of knowing how to be professional, knowing what to do, what to say, whether or not you shake hands during an interview, little things that we do. I was on an interview at one time, and I was really serious, and I didn't really understand what my facial expression should be during an interview, and my prospective employer, told me, Christy, you look like you were being punched. My face was so serious. So now I know, oh my God, I better think about it and practice smiling. And I better practice at least figuring out some way, you know, in the interview process, even though I'm feeling nervous, I better smile. How many people think about that during the interview? Who are you? Vivian Younger.
A lot of times with clients, I tell them that they need to do active listening because we miss out on a lot of nonverbal behavior. We have to learn nonverbal behavior and do that nonverbal behavior, even though it may be foreign for us to do that.
Good. Can I repeat? Yeah. Okay, so Vivian said that she works with her clients and talks to them about nonverbal behavior and following nonverbal cues and doing them even though it feels foreign. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm happy to give an example.
Okay, go ahead. She's going to give an example. Okay, so she said, face the person who's speaking to you, and if you hear some kind of something going on, turn toward that, whether something you drop, somebody drops something behind you or whatever it is, turn and act as if you're looking in that direction. So having the ability to really be aboard, on board, by doing research ahead of time, by conducting an informational interview beforehand, researching the company, going on the internet, looking up the company. Maybe you know somebody in that field. We had a friend who is interviewing for some positions that got hold of us, Ed and myself, because we were able to help him, and he knew that we would be able to address the information with him. So when he goes to the interview this week, he will be able to have a much better idea as to the questions that are being asked, why they're being asked, and the information that he needs to give in his answer. So this is forethought. That's a soft skill, forethought. Thinking ahead of time about what is going to be asked or expected. Why do people fail at interviews? And believe me, I've gone on so many of them, I can't even count them all. And I always wonder about sometimes why I didn't make it, why I came in second or third or who knows. So one of the things that I do, I call and I talk to the person who I interviewed with, and I say, well, I know that you didn't hire me this time around. What could I have done differently to have helped my chances? And I've gotten some very good and honest information about my style. Okay, Donna Brown. So Donna's saying that we have to feel good enough about ourselves, and even that we tried, that we even went through the interview, because some people won't even do that. So to feel good about enough about ourselves that we go, that we're able to go and ask those questions, because it's very valuable information that we receive. Who's speaking? Cindy. Okay.
How do you change the manager's view? Because I recently was with you, and I went to the people that got told of them to that job, I made it an error, and it came out in my past. Research, the more indulged it is, the more that I'm going to go with. And it's not a right of file at all, but the person 2 days before,
okay.
How do you get past that? Because honestly, I've been lost.
Okay, so how do you, she's asking, how do you get past once you've been told that you'll never be hired for a position because perhaps something happened? You know, it happens everywhere. I know people that, you know, gave their 2 weeks notice to company and the person wasn't able to follow through with the 2 week notice. And so that person now is not hireable in that company. Things happen. You could keep turning in your applications in different parts of the state since you're a state worker. You could do that. But Nellie's going to answer that as well. But, you know, maybe there's a reason and maybe it's time to look at other avenues. So Nellie's going to answer that question.
I'd like to say that for state employees in most departments, they have rules about information that is kept in an individual's personnel file. Okay, and what I'm going to say is that if there is something in the personnel file, in most departments, it's time limited. An individual has the right to request a review of their personnel file, and if there's anything damaging in there after a specified period of time that the department has, those things can be removed. And if it's a matter of needing to learn additional skills so that a person meets the minimum qualifications and has the necessary background and experience for the position, then the individual can request training from the employer or find other sources of preparation for the position. And if it's a matter of that there exists a difficult personality situation with that individual, one can attempt to sit down with the person and say, look, we need to really discuss. My goals are obtaining a position such as this. I have, you know, ABC abilities. What is it that you would like to see that is different? And some people you can work with and some people you can't. And then if that's the case, then, you know, it might be necessary to explore other options.
Back to Christy.
Well, you know, maybe we can talk a little bit more outside, but one of the things that I also really wanted to bring up is, so you got the job, or maybe you didn't get the job. And I know people, and I know because I've been in this situation, you're angry. Guess what? That anger screams out. And one of the things that I have a colleague who's in the field of social work, and she hasn't been hired in 2.5 years. And I have another colleague who hasn't been hired in probably 5 or 6 years. And the one thing I tell them, you need to deal with your anger. And you know what? It was told to me by one of my mentors. And so it's kind of like I'm paying it forward. When a person is angry, no matter how that person tries to disguise that anger, if it's not being channeled in a healthy direction, which again is another soft skill, it just, bam, closes the door on you. You may be the best person in the world, but if your anger is screaming out, nobody's going to want to be 50 feet, 50 yards within your presence, working with you as a supervisor or a coworker. So if you're feeling anger, and I'm not talking about just you, Cindy, but I hear it, if a person is feeling anger, get help. Get some therapy and deal with it. Read some books. Do whatever it's going to take to channel that anger in a healthy direction. And let's say that you get the job. I know a lot of people who get jobs and can't keep them. And so one issue is the nonverbal, and that's a big issue. And if you find that things are happening and you're not understanding them or you're not fitting in, I would get some help for this. I would go to somebody you trust that can coach you. Go to therapy, whatever you have to do, because you want to keep that job. You want to work on remaining a viable asset to the company that you are hired to work with. And I'm going to pass it over to Nellie now because I've taken up a lot of time.
Well, I'm really happy to have the opportunity to speak with you today about the obstacles to employment. And we can have a very long list about obstacles to employment, but we can talk about some of the main ones. Among persons with disabilities, one of the greatest obstacle to employment is the fear or the concern of losing benefits such as SSI, SSDI, and Medi-Cal. And many people will prepare for an occupation. Many people will go to school. Many people have a really lot to offer in terms of their knowledge and their capability and their enthusiasm, and they will not go to work because of fear of losing benefits. And there are agencies and individuals throughout the state that can work with people on work incentives through the Social Security Administration. Their programs have many opportunities to be able to keep your benefits and then also gradually transition into full-time employment. And you can contact the independent living centers. Many of them have individuals who are experts in dealing with Social Security and teaching people about work incentives. You can go on the website DB101, which has the Social Security benefits information and information about work incentives. DB. Yeah. An additional obstacle to employment for many people who are blind and low vision is where you live and the transportation availability in the area where you live. And if you are really motivated to gain employment, you need to give some serious consideration to where you live and where you're willing to go to get a job, and whether you're willing to relocate from your given area if the employment that you're interested in does not exist in your immediate community or there are so few opportunities in your immediate community that you really have to look elsewhere. One thing that can be very helpful is getting information from the Employment Development Department, Workforce, WorkSource Centers, and you can learn through the data that is on the computers and also with the workers that are there to find out if the employment that you're interested in is available in your community or where it's available. You can also learn through research what qualifications are needed, but primarily you just need to begin by deciding how far you're willing to travel on a daily basis to a job that you'll go to 5 days a week, and what's that going to look like? What's it going to look like in terms of your time? How long the commute will be? When you have to get up in the morning? When you're going to get home at night? Need to look at your family needs. If you have children, if you have a spouse, if you have aging parents that you might have to have responsibilities for, and all of these things figure into your decision if you can work full-time and do a far commute for the employment that you need. Another obstacle to employment that kind of goes hand in hand with how far you're willing to go distance-wise to go to work is your orientation and mobility skills. Do you feel confident to get on a bus? Do you feel confident crossing streets? Do you know how to utilize light rail or commuter trains? Do you feel that you have sufficient orientation to go places independently, or do you need to use other services to help you in this direction, such as accessing a local agency that may be able to provide orientation and mobility training for you, or the many of the transportation systems that I know I live in Southern California, and we have the Riverside Transit Agency, which, by the way, has the most segmented, broken-up bus routes in all history. And it's extremely difficult to get to many places. And as a matter of fact, I lived in the house where we live for almost 10 years, and they discontinued the bus line, and then paratransit went away. So I know about transportation challenges, but the Riverside Transit Agency, along with other transit agencies, have travel training individuals that can come out and work with you and teach you how to use the bus lines, if provided they exist where you live, and help you to work out a route to get to the doctor, to visit your family, or to go to work. So those are resources that do exist out there, and they are no cost. Another obstacle to employment is a person's lack of confidence in themselves and what they are able to achieve. I can use myself as an example. I was a good student. I got really good grades, was on the dean's list, and had a really good GPA in college. And so I could do school really well. But I really wasn't too sure. Oh, and I could do other jobs, too. I could type. I could answer the phone and do clerical things. I felt really comfortable doing that. But then when I was approaching graduating from college, I was thinking in terms of a professional type job, and I did not have the confidence to really go there. And I had a rehabilitation counselor many years ago, actually a counselor teacher, and she told me, you could do my job. And I said, what? Me do your job? No way, I can't do that. And she says, well, she says, you can read Braille. She says, I teach Braille and you could teach Braille. You can cook, you can teach cooking. You can do all of those independent living skills and help people learn them. And I thought about it, and I thought, well, yeah, I guess you're right. Well, anyway, with a lot of encouragement on her part, I did apply when they had counselor teacher positions in Department of Rehabilitation, and I got hired. And I really owe it all to her, because I don't think I would have done it otherwise. And so sometimes, very often, it's really important to look at ourselves and really go a little bit beyond our comfort zone and stretch to achieve something that is really important to do and that's really going to make a difference in our lives. And many of the obstacles to employment are often seen as external and out there in society and in the attitudes that exist about persons with disability and in the misinformation that employers may have about insurance possibly being, a person with a disability being an insurance liability and that therefore they might not want to have a disabled person on their staff, and other misinformation. And that does exist to a certain extent. However, if working within the networks that we have, the organized blind, the college communities, the high school communities, and opportunities that exist, we can help to educate people that these things are not the case. And there are studies that have been conducted that show that many workers with disabilities are actually very reliable, productive, and valuable employees. So the myths are there, but the facts are also there to help you. So I'm going to pass it back to Christy.
Because everybody knows I always have something to say. I have two things. First, I don't know if I'm an alien, but I don't think I am. When I first started working, it was so hard for me to get into the shoes of somebody who was working, because I had been on SSI for a long time, and so my time was my own. And boy, was that hard to get used to. You have to get up, you have to do your job, you have to do it when they say, not when you say. And my friends would be going to the beach or doing whatever, and oh boy, that was a tough stretch and a soft skill I had to use in a red hot second, that I had to say, oh no, your playing days are on the weekends, girlfriend. You're done. You're working. And, not missing days of work and not coming in late. And even I was docked because my access would drop me off late, and they docked my pay. And another time I was with people, and I had just gotten hired on this one job, and we went somewhere for lunch, us girls, and we came back 5 minutes late. Guess who got written up? Moi. Guess who didn't do that again? Moi. So we really, really have to think about, this is a whole different culture. Working is a whole different culture than staying home and doing what I want to do when I want to do it, taking a nap when I feel like it, staying up till midnight when I know that I have to be up at 5 o'clock in the morning. No, I go to bed at 9 o'clock at night. And I'm like, I used to start living at 9 o'clock at night. Not anymore. Go ahead, Donna. Yeah, we have to put things into priority. How the time it's going to take to set our outfits out, to make sure that we're not going off looking weird. Because if a sighted person or an able-bodied person looks a certain way, they chose to look that way. But if somebody with a disability goes out looking some way, oh, you poor thing, you didn't know what you were doing. I'm going to hand it to Rob to see what you want to say, and then I'll think about the last thing. I forgot what I was going to say. Here's Rob.
No, you didn't.
How are we doing for time, Ed? Okay, great. 4:30? Oh, okay. All right. Anybody have any questions? No, I agree.
Well, okay, what I want to bring up, the idea is, when do these soft skills start? That's a good panel discussion that we could talk about. And the other thing is, what are the soft skills that I need to have when I interview? If you're going to go to an interview, let's say you're totally blind, what soft skills do I need to enter that building, get into that room? And I'll pass it to Rob.
Thank you for reading my mind, Ed. When I thought I only had maybe 2 minutes left with you all, and how grateful I am that we get to extend this a little bit longer, because you're all wonderful. I was going to say, and I think and I regret, did Vivian Younger leave the room?
Yes.
Are you still here?
Yes.
Vivian, stand up, please, because I want to say thank you. The question was, how early do you start teaching soft skills? And I'll tell you right now, at the age of 4, Vivian made a project out of me. And for 10 years invested a good, unreasonable amount of her life into helping me be the man I am today. And I want to thank you for that. And you can sit down now. And that is the case. And I wasn't the only person. There was a youth program that she ran in the city of Los Altos. But it definitely to start as early as you can to teach people how to be right, not just how to be good blind people, but how to be good people, and to understand that it's never too late or never too early to learn or to change. And I would say again, it's never too late or never too early to learn or to change. And so these are decisions, these are choices we make. And if we're working with folks who aren't ready to make those decisions and they need guidance and instruction and protection along the way, then we take that time and we help them and we let them know it's never too early to learn and it's never too early to change. You make your decisions now. And likewise, as adults, when our lives change, if our vision changes, if our situations changes, if our bus lines get canceled outside of our house, it is never too late to learn or to change. And so to wrap up that element of my response, I would say look to yourself. If you feel there's a need there, if that's a message that's meaningful to you, start today. If you know someone, if you're a service provider and you work with someone, don't give up. It will matter. Maybe decades later, someone will come by and say thank you, and it will matter then, I hope. Thank you.
I would say that soft skills training starts the minute you have a chance, whether you're a 3-year-old. We're working with our granddaughter, our six-year-old grandson who says, I can't. And I tell him, I don't understand that word. If you want to ask me for help, you can ask me for help, but don't tell me I can't do it, because you can. We all need to continue to working on soft skills. I just had my individual development plan, and I got a good one, and I love my supervisor because we can be real with each other. And after she read my paperwork, she brought up something to me. And it's something that, you know, I struggle with, and I will struggle with my whole life. And I thanked her because now I get to continue working on that, and I'd rather have somebody tell me than not be told and not know that I am continuing to have this area of opportunity for growth. Nellie?
Mm-hmm. When do soft skills begin? One of the things that I think is really critical is we need to work with youth. We need to talk with the kids that are in junior high school and high school and ask them, what do you think is important? How do you feel about this? Where do you see yourself in the next 3 to 4 years? What is your biggest fear? What's your biggest challenge right now? What would be something that would help you to go forward and plan things for the future, for when you graduate junior high school, when you graduate high school? What are the things that teachers can help with? What are the things that friends can help with? What are the things you expect from these people? What do you hope for in the future? What are things that your family can help you with? And all of the networks that exist that can expand the vision of youth. Because many young people, they have a very small world. They have their family, they go to school, and a few friends. Other young people have larger opportunities. But as people and as professionals, we need to reach out to make sure that all of the kids in the schools who are visually impaired and really giving it what they can have all the opportunities that they need in order to grow and in order to challenge themselves. When I was going to school, there was, you know, as a child and a teenager, there was two schools of thought. One was that if you are visually impaired, you're probably not going to accomplish a whole lot. And so some kids were just warehoused and passed from one grade to another. The other school of thought was that the children with vision loss needed to be held to a higher standard and that they needed to be better than everybody else. And fortunately, I had the teachers who had that school of thought and wanted me to be as best as I can possibly be and better than the average. And that was ingrained in me, and that really helped me to achieve things while I was going to school and then later in my life. And at this point, I want to invite Richard Huerta to say a few things to us, and I'm going to pass on the microphone. Yeah.
It's right here.
What am I saying?
We're talking about transition and kids.
Okay.
And soft skills. There you go. I will stand, and my dog will sit. Sit down. Do you have a dog there?
Yeah.
Okay. Oda, sit. I don't mind standing. I've been sitting. Okay. Richard Retha, and I have been working in the field of transition, well, since 2005 with DOR, and then since 2012 with Junior Blind, or late 2011. And so I'm really have made this my passion for the past 10 years, just working with youth. I was in a panel last week at CTEVI, California Transcribers and Educators of the Blind and Visually Impaired, a long, long name, otherwise known as CTE. And we were talking about transition. And for me, my parents, to speak to what Nellie just said, really held me to the expectations of my brother and to everyone else. I was the only blind person. I am the only blind person in my family. I am the only one in my entire family who went to college. My parents are both successful. My step-parents are successful, step-mom and step-dad, and my brother. And they did it without going to college. They went to vocational school. I went to college, and my mom kept pushing me. I wasn't sure at the age of 16 if I was going to do college. I was interested, but no one really pushed me. And it was that first job, and I tell the story occasionally, so bear with me if you've heard this. The first job I've ever had was the worst job and best job I ever had when you think of being 16 years old. And it also speaks to what Chrissy said earlier about having to really persuade yourself that it's okay to work on the weekend and not go to the beach or buy CDs or go hang out with your friends. So my first job at 16, thanks in large part to Braille Institute, was working at Carl's Jr., back in 1991, and I had to wear that silly uniform with the pointy hat, the polished shoes. I worked on the weekend. The great thing about that job was I was making $5.25 an hour, which was minimum wage back then. And it was a real paycheck. It was real money. It went into my pocket. It was the alternative to allowance that I would get occasionally from my family. However, it was the worst job I ever had because I had to give up my weekend. I had to scrub potatoes for the baked potatoes. I had to put fries in the fryer and come home with grease and zits on my face. And it was a real learning opportunity because I realized then that, wow, if I don't go to college, really this is all I'm going to be able to do. This is all I'm going to be eligible for. So as the term goes, fire in the belly, that put fire in my belly. I was determined that I'm not going to scrub tables and clean toilets the rest of my life. It's a starting point, and it was a good starting point. But again, it was that exposure and that determination from my family that you're going to work, and you're going to go to college, and you're going to work. And I just turned 40, and ever since I've been 16, I've always had a job. It may have been a summer job, a camp counselor job, but I always held to the expectation. Okay. So when it comes to transition, are we okay? Is she sleeping? So are there any questions so far to that, what I just said? Nellie, Christy, Rob, Ed? Okay. So there's my story. Thank you.
Let's go to the second question. In an interview, let's say, again, if you're going for an interview and you're really low vision or totally blind, what are some of the soft skills that you would need for that interview? And I'll have, since Richard's standing here, go for it.
Have a really cute dog. No, thank you. I'll stand. I think it comes to what we mentioned earlier, eye contact, and just really being alert, being attentive. When in the interview, is that what you were asking, Ed? When in the interview, really being attentive, being alert, and being mindful of who your interviewees are or interviewers are, and just having a dialogue and really using your visual impairment, your disability as an asset, and really just talking about it when the time's appropriate, because I think that's going to, especially those jobs that are not in the disability field or rehab field or social services field, you have a more of a need to describe what that is and just put it out there. And that's the school that I come from. Whether they ask you about your disability, whether they should or not, it's illegal. But at the same time, I want to be the one who's throwing that first pitch and just talking about it so the elephant gets out of the room. Nellie?
Also, when you're going, when you're preparing yourself for the interview, you need to think in terms of what the position you're applying for is, and make sure that you come in dressed appropriately for the position that you're planning to fill. And it requires, you know, doing some research in advance to know whether that company, they generally dress very casual, or if they dress more business professional, or exactly what the culture is of the company. And you can present in a proper manner for the position that you're going to be coming in for. And also in terms of your choice of cosmetics and things like that, women shouldn't wear excessive amounts of makeup, and the color of your clothing might want to be more basic and more conservative. Men may not want to use half a bottle of cologne before you go to the interview. Things of that nature. You need to just be clean and presentable and appropriate for the interview.
We talk about this a lot in my job preparation groups. How you act the minute you get into that waiting room. Those people are looking at you and determining right off the bat, well, I don't know about this person. This person's real fidgety, or, you know, whatever you're doing. What I did was I did a dry run, and I do whenever I can, is to get to the place so that I can be more confident on the day of the interview. Takes a little bit of work, but it's worth it. When I go into the interview room, when I'm being called into the interview room, I shake hands. And, you know, it's appropriate to shake hands to set your things down quietly and gently. And, you know, those of us with dogs, you know, unfortunately, sometimes, you know, like what happened to Rob's poor dog happens, and it's embarrassing. But, you know, if you don't freak out about it, then they won't. Shake hands, introduce yourself, remember their names, and say, it's nice to meet you, Mr. So-and-so. And even if you know the people, it's nice just to say, hi, it's nice to see you again. When you're leaving, thank the person, shake hands. When you're in the interview, look at the people that are talking to you and look around the table so that you're not just speaking to that one person. I have a tendency to really have to think about that, because when I'm talking, I just, you know, tend to kind of stare straight ahead or at the person that asked me the question. Also, I said that asking about disabilities and asking about your capabilities is illegal. It is. So, you know, they're dying to know, how can Christy blah, blah, blah. Well, I'm not going to allow them to wonder, because I'm going to tell them. This is how I've even gone so far as to show people. I bring my Braille Note Apex in, and I'll say, and this is how I write, and, you know, this is how I would take notes or whatever. So that they understand that, okay, yeah, there are things ways that we can do the work. And I talk about, you know, some of the accessibility issues, and you know that there are agencies and things that we can do to work on the accessibility to the job. So I let them know, and I bring it out in my answers to the questions that they ask. That's really what I think the thing that I had forgot that I wanted to say is, don't be afraid to sell yourself. You're your number one salesperson. Be careful, because you don't want to be cocky. You want to be humble and respectful and knowledgeable. And don't exude, I'm blocking another word. Yeah, that's wonderful to do in an interview too. You don't want to be defensive. You know, come across and be light and make a joke. Yeah, and you don't want to be offensive, says Donna Brown, and she's correct. Here you go, Rob.
So, my dog's okay. She, I think, just got startled awake and disoriented, and I've certainly had enough nights like that where I'm like, where am I? What's going on? Where's my bed? What am I doing on the floor? That's probably what she's thinking. What am I doing on the floor? All right, so I like everything that's been said here. My good friend Serena Olson, she's a cane traveler, Braille advocate, and formerly employment placement specialist at Lions Center for the Blind in Oakland. She's about in 2 weeks leaving for staging to become a Peace Corps volunteer. And it's been great to see her in that journey. A few months after she took the job, moving from being just a Braille teacher to an employment specialist at the Lions Center, I asked her, what is it that you're seeing? Because this is relevant to the work I do with Junior Blind. What is it that you're seeing that they need? Because maybe I could teach them that before they get to you. And she says, there's three things. And she had the answer right away. And I think we should all take notes on this. Those who have been taking notes, three things. You ready for this? It's even easier than the four things I told you to remember earlier. Three things. The first is your blindness skills. And so be prepared to be able to account for any of the accommodations that you would be asked to enact in able to perform a task. Be able to describe what you would do with a call center using accessible software. Be able to describe how you would be able to write reports or keep up in meetings or to manage projects or whatever the job may be. Be prepared to know what those accommodations are and even possibly be able to demonstrate them if it wouldn't completely derail the flow of the interview. But have those blindness skills already in place. Come correct and be ready to demonstrate that you've got the skills to have the job, or you wouldn't be wasting their time with an interview for a job you shouldn't be hired for. The second is self-advocacy skills. And this goes hand in hand. Have the skills, have the blindness skills, but then be able to communicate about them effectively in a way that's not defensive or offensive. Maybe another word would be aggressive. We don't want to misread a situation and have our reactions misread. We want to be able to have that level of rapport, that those social rapport domain skills, to say, I bet you're wondering about this, or I understand that this is part of my duties. I want you to know this is taken care of. I can totally do this. Hey, watch this. Look at this trick I can do. And I can do this every day, and you can pay me for it. And that kind of thing goes a long ways, because it demystifies it. It gets the elephant out of the room. It demystifies the situation. It opens the conversation up for honest correspondence in dialogue with your interviewer about how qualified you are and why you should have this job, how soon he should be hiring you or she should be hiring you. And so get that conversation going. Be ready to accurately communicate about what you can do. Disclosure is always the option of the individual, but I would say more times than not, accurately communicated disclosure gets you farther in the process against your non-disabled peers than failure to disclose or reluctance to disclose. Finally, number three, because I promised three things, your blindness skills, your self-advocacy skills, self-confidence. Remember that you're there for a reason. You're there to have that job that you know that you deserve and that you can earn and that you've got the skills to do. Let them know that you believe this. Be self-confident. Be self-confident in life. I mean, you got there. You know, in my experience, when blind people travel, just showing up on time, that's like an extreme sport. You know, so be proud of that. You know, walk in with a smile and pride and know I did this. I'm here. Now let's get this over with so you can start paying me. You know, because I want to take a vacation in 6 months. I'm going to Italy. It's going to be great. You know, let them know you can do these things. I had a question or a comment. Take a moment to check your hair and makeup. Yeah, I mean, yeah, absolutely. And you know, like I tell my students, what do I tell my students, Richard? If you're not early, you're running late. Yeah, if you're not early, you're running late. And you know, make sure that you walk in fresh. Make sure, you know, look the part. Don't just be confident, look confident. Bring all of the things that equate with confidenceness. Bring all that with you. And just in general, whether you're disabled or not disabled, self-confidence, that is valued by society in general. People who are more confident tend to develop healthier relationships or have more opportunities than the people who tend to be less confident or communicate their own uncertainty about their own abilities. I mean, why would you want to invest in people who are already telling you that they don't think they can do it?
Confidence, humility, yes. All right. Well, so we had this panel talking about soft skills. Okay, we talked about it. So, okay, how do I learn? Where do I start? Well, a good way to start is maybe being honest with yourself. Go to a good friend, go to somebody you really know and say, hey, what do you see in me that I need to improve on? What is my communication skill with others? How do I dress? How do I walk? How am I communicating with people? What happens when I get angry? What do I need to work on that? Am I dressing, combing my hair? For women, maybe overdoing with the makeup or maybe not doing the makeup. Or putting on a t-shirt and jeans and just looking like you're always working in the garden when you go shopping. All of those are things that you can work on now, and you could ask people that you know that can do an assessment, a self-assessment of yourself, and take that criticism and not be angry when they say, well, you know what, people don't really like it because you don't really talk to them. You're always interrupting. So take that. All right, so you got this list. So where do I practice? Well, you could practice at the California Council of Blind Convention Conference. This is a good place to be, interact with other people, walk with people, and learn how to go up to a table. Don't just plow through the crowd and be first, or go to the registration desk and be first because nobody else knew that you just plowed through the line. Learn how to, in a sense, be polite. Go to church. Go to your church community. Interact there. If you're in college, go to the student center. Now, that's a fear that a lot of people who are blind or visually impaired are. They really avoid those social areas. Get involved with the social club. Go to Toastmasters. That is excellent. If you're afraid of talking, go to Toastmasters. And it doesn't matter where you are, whether you're in college, a training center, work on those skills. If you are saying, well, who do I contact? How do I get hold of these skills? You can contact Department of Vocational Rehabilitation if you're not a consumer of our department. Now, that's only if you're really serious about looking for employment. Don't come just because, well, somebody said I should learn these skills for a job. Come sincerely to really want to work, because if you're going to come to us, you better be ready to work. When you go to a training center, or what I call pre-vocational training, when they criticize you or give you input into what you're learning there, take it as a learning experience. Don't get mad at the teacher because they said your mobility isn't that great, or your typing skills are still at 20 words and you've been there 3 or 4 months. Take the criticism and work on it. And if you're going to a training center, let's say ROP or even a community college, like I said, interact with the society that's there. So to summarize, Christy wants to have one more.
Well. Well, one of the things that we do at Patton State Hospital, and I wish that the Department of Rehabilitation would look into, is the CASAS testing. And CASAS is Comprehensive Adult Student Assessment Systems. And these are tests that help you determine what your areas of strength are and your areas, what I call opportunity for improvement or growth opportunities. And if you get a chance to get with someone who can work with you on the CASAS, you can go to CASAS.org, CASAS.org, and look at it and take it to your rehab counselor and say, look, this is really cool. Those of you who maybe haven't finished school, this is something that schools get funding for. I don't know if Hadley School for the Blind is involved with the CASAS, but if they're not, perhaps maybe they need to be. It's an up-and-coming thing that really helps people to determine not how good you are at algebra, not how good you are at spelling, but it determines, yes, you can read maps. Yes, you can take direction. And it's all those little things that, and junior blind may want to look at this too. It helps in determining what you know that you don't know you know, and what you need help in learning. And then there is curriculum, lesson planning, lessons that help in these areas. But I love the CASAS, and my coworker loves the CASAS. One of the things that I just want to say, if somebody tells you, wow, you're really good at such and such, or I really like how you blah, 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 write it down. Think about it that somebody gave you a compliment, and when you're looking at your own strengths, consider that what other people tell you. So when somebody says, well, what are your strengths? You don't go, I smile good. I don't know. Write down if you have to. When people tell you that you've done something well, and internalize it.
All right. Well, that's a good summary as well, and I appreciate that. And let's thank Richard, Robert, Christy, and Nellie, and with a soft skill clap. And thank you.